Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know that elders and others are losing their rights to liberty and property? Anyone can petition a court to have a person deemed incapacitated. What if that person is you? The adult guardianship system was created to protect incompetent people and their assets. A court-appointed guardian, sometimes a total stranger, can force you into a nursing home and sell your home to pay for services. Treasured belongings can disappear as you are drugged and isolated from loved ones. Why does this happen? Unfortunately, the courts don't have the funding to supervise and audit cases. A guardian makes all decisions on your behalf, taking control of your assets with little accountability. The potential for abuse is frightening. Luckily, not all guardians exploit those under their care, but when they do, there's really nowhere to go for help. The National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, NASGA, is working to reform adult guardianship to return it to its once noble purpose of protecting the human rights to life, liberty, and property and ending financial exploitation of assets. Are you or your loved ones protected? To learn more, visit StopGuardianAbuse.org.
Good evening, everyone. That is a public service announcement from NASGA, National Association to Stop Guardianship Abuse. And we thank them very much for letting us use their commercial. Anyway, good evening once again, everyone. Today is March 31st, actually, 2021. You're listening to Faceless Radio, Hidden Truth Revealed channel on Blog Talk Radio. The Inside Scoop. I am Luann Fleming, and I am with my other co-host tonight. Let me see. Oh, they're all just now calling in. I think I have Marcy with us. Hold on. Let me bring her in. We have Marcy. Hold on. Marcy, you with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, Lulu. And
hi.
Thank you.
And
everyone,
we also
for joining.
Yeah. We also have Hillary Hogg with us. I just pulled her in. Hillary, you're live with us on the air?
Good evening, everyone. Hope everyone's doing well.
Yeah.
And
I am
we're banding together.
Yes, we are. I am still waiting for Robin Austin to join us. He shall be coming in soon. So we have two out of three co-hosts with us tonight, and we have a full show tonight. I'll tell you a little bit about it. So please, everybody, let's try not to speak over anyone as our radio shows are recorded and archived. And we will be taking calls maybe later on in the show. We're not sure yet. It depends on what all of our guests have to say. And we're going to be talking about the 2021 AAAPG Guardianship Symposium coming to us. This will be This will be in two sessions, and it's going to be on Zoom, and it's going to be virtual. And it's going to be Sunday, April 11th, 2021, starting at 6 p.m., and Monday, April 12th, 2021, starting at 9 a.m., And I know that Robin Austin and myself, Luann Fleming, is going to be doing a speech on that. And we've just got them sending our speeches into Dr. Sam Sugar, and they are really good speeches. So we've been working on them. I've been so swamped this last week. I've never been so busy in my life. But, you know, this is really, really worth it for what all these advocates have to say on our radio shows. So anyway, let's see if who else is on here with us. Okay, we do have Rick Black with us. We're going to be bringing him on soon. We also have Lisa McCarley. She's going to be coming on with us. And we do have Jennifer, who is also coming on with us. And let me wait for just a second for other people to be showing up. And I've heard that some of the radio show is already so full that just keep please trying to recall. And if it bumps you out, just call back in. So we had this problem last week. But hopefully it won't be as bad this week. We had Dr. Sam Sugar on last week to talk about his symposium. What's coming up next week, it's going to be really awesome to have. So, first of all, while we're waiting for Robin Austin to come with us, we are going to bring our first guest in. And I think I have her with us. Her name is Jennifer, and we're going to leave it at Jennifer for now. And she's going to be talking to us. She's a victim in probate. And are you with us? Let's see if she's on here first. Jennifer?
Hi there. I'm Jennifer.
Okay, great.
Can you hear me?
I'm here. Yeah, we welcome you to the show. I mean, we're really glad to have you, and you're going to be speaking at the symposium, or you're going to be having a video. But instead of
talking
about...
I think.
Yeah. Okay, both you're going to think. Okay, so instead of talking about what you're going to be speaking of and all that and kind of giving it away, because we want everybody to come to the symposium and listen to these fantastic speakers that are going to be there. We had three of them on last week, Dr. Sam Sugar, Terry Kennedy, and we had Beverly Newman come on last week, and I can't remember if it was someone else, but it was an awesome show, everybody. We had really great reviews over that. So we're going to start off with you tonight, and then we're going to bring Lisa McCarley in and Rick Black. And so give us a little bit of idea what you're going to be talking about and what you can talk about, that you've been a victim in probate. And go ahead and start with that if you want.
Sure. Okay. So anyway, greetings, everyone. I'm actually phoning in from Dublin, Ireland, which is where I now live. And I was put into a conservatorship of the person in the 1990s. And, you know, it would be, in a way, I was thinking about, oh, maybe it was worse back then. But I think it's still somewhat bad for a lot of people. First off, let me just say that I know that there are people who really need conservatorship, and there are legitimate guardians and conservators working hard to do a good job, and I don't mean to put any of those people down, but there's a problem where there's not appropriate oversight, and I was looking around trying to get the percentage on how many of these arrangements are fraudulent, and I can't get a firm number, but we can't even get a firm number of how many people are in guardianship or conservatorship. I've read 1.3 million, 1.5 million. Anyway, so one of the issues I've been asked to talk about, why should you care about this? Why should your listeners care? And, you know, I'm thinking about that a little bit. And there are a lot of scams out there. And, you know, there are phishing scams, for example. And, you know, we all sometimes get emails from companies we do business with, watch out, there's a phishing scam out there, don't click the link, this sort of thing. There are enough people scamming individuals, scamming the courts, and using conservatorship as a way to prey on people. It's very, very important to know what this looks like so that you don't fall victim to it and no one in your family falls victim to it. And unfortunately for me, and I'm not going to go into too much detail about my situation, but I came from an immigrant family, working-class parents. They came to America, and they believed that people with certain credentials could be trusted, and I think they were, you know, like you don't talk back and this kind of thing. And I think that they were easy targets, let me put it that way. And then I became the target. And what's extraordinary about mine is I was a PhD candidate at Yale University. Someone wanted me put in a conservatorship, and I'm not going to go into all the details now, but I wasn't even told anything about the hearing. I wasn't even told that it was happening. I wasn't told afterwards. And then what happened to me is for years and years, I had problems where I couldn't get health care. I had all kinds of difficulties. I couldn't get my medical records. And finally, you know, my father actually came forward and he finally told me what the problem was. And it's actually very sad. One of my brothers was involved, and this brother was already in a lot of trouble. And my father was having to kind of make a choice between, like, who's he going to save and who's he going to sacrifice. But what's interesting is that he thought that by revealing it, that would just be the end of it, and, oh, like, my brother would be in trouble. But no, here I am 4 years later. I'm still in conservatorship. My brother's disbarred for other offenses in California. He's not a lawyer anymore. But I've been told that because my thing is longstanding, it can't get overturned. So, you know, frankly, it doesn't make sense for me to live in a country where I don't have the same civil rights as other people. My conservatorship is of the person, and it was suggested to me that the idea was that would make it easy to hide. And then the conservator put all kinds of lies in my medical record, and it was going to be easy to convert it to one for the estate as well when the time was right, when there could be a payoff. Anyway, I've already said too much, but the point really is that I was not impaired then, and I'm not impaired now. I'm living in Ireland, and it's been very disrupting to my whole family. It's been disruptive, but actually, I've been here since 2019. I returned to graduate school. I'm upskilling and I'm refreshing my technical skills, and I'm doing well. And I just think it's a little shocking that this can happen, and that really the leaders of the country seem to kind of have turned their backs to the reality of it. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, someone says you're disabled. And the reality is that once you're legally adjudicated as incapacitated, nothing that you say or do matters at all. You know, like the fact that my brother's disbarred, and that meanwhile I was living this sort of parallel life where I didn't know I was legally incapacitated. I had a perfect record, you know, legally a perfect driving record actually as well. I taught in the public schools. They actually did the screening. You know, I don't have a police record. I passed with flying colors, good references. I was put in charge of American public school children. And you know what? I was a good teacher, too. I mean, but in a separate universe of the probate court, I'm incapacitated. You know, it's very, very strange. So I think my case is fairly unusual, but I think that it indicates to me that this really can happen to anyone. And, you know, this system needs to be fixed. There's really a problem here. So anyway, that was a little long, meandering comment.
So we're getting a lot of questions coming in to me all of a sudden on Facebook and all over, and everybody wants to know, well, where's your kids? And so if you were in United States and then you left, you have children, were they able to go with you, or how do you work that out? I mean,
those are very good questions. It is. It's been very, very hard, and I'm always trying to find a silver lining in everything. You know what I mean? So, you know, being a conscientious person, I was actually entitled to Irish citizenship because of my family background, and actually it's a little complicated, but my grandparents were born here, and then, you know, the child of that, they went to Scotland. So, like, I'm British and Irish, and but the thing is that the Irish are very generous, so they gave my husband citizenship, and I filed for it years ago, and my kids all have this, like, we filed for it, right? So that helps, right? But I'm here, and I waited until my youngest child finished high school, and there was a kind of a weird dynamic where some people were still trying to say, oh, you're not under conservatorship, oh, that's ridiculous. But meanwhile, more and more information was coming out, and finally attorneys confirmed it. And then I was pushing, and as I was making complaints and pointing out to medical people and you know, writing letters to the Department of Health, that I had never had a psychiatric workup. I had never had a diagnosis. I've never been admitted to any facility. I have no substance abuse problem, nothing, okay? In fact, I'm a public school teacher. I think that it was getting very uncomfortable for the conservator. And then I got wind of the fact that, well, what does a conservator usually do in that situation? You know, they're, oh, we'll fix that. Like, we're going to claim she had a breakdown and we're going to put her in a facility, you know. Basically, things kind of came to a head. I quieted down a little bit just long enough for my youngest to graduate. And then I planned a big family event and invited a bunch of people to it. And it was a big 30th anniversary, actually, for my husband and me. And unbeknownst to the conservator and others, the real plan was that I would escape to Canada the weekend before. So nobody was expecting it because we'd booked, you know, like it was quite, like they were planning on grabbing me right after. And that's my understanding from, you know, what was told to me, you know what I mean? So anyway, I went to Canada. I went in, we celebrated our anniversary there, and then I boarded a plane to Dublin. And I'm actually very happy here. My husband is kind of wrapping things up at home, and then he's going to join me. One of my sons is living with me here now, and he's a student at UC Santa Barbara, but he's actually a grad student now. He's able to work remotely. He's studying. He's teaching. Another one of my children is at Rutgers, and he's at home with his dad in New York. And then I have another son, the one who's the youngest. He's a student at Wisconsin at Madison. And he was here with me for a couple of months in the fall, and he went back and he's with his dad. But, you know, it seems kind of crazy, and the people involved in my conservatorship are heavy substance abusers. And, like, no one in my family, we don't have a drinking problem. You know what I mean? And it's just, it just feels very predatory. And, in fact, what some members of my family have said is that, it's a sexist family, and I was the only daughter, and it was like, oh, I'm doing really well. I'm going to Yale now. And then, you know, I'm marrying into this family, and there's money and everything. And it's like, oh, you know, she has so much more than the rest of the family. It doesn't seem fair, you know? And
Hold on a second. First of all, I want to let our listeners know that you can be conserved at any age. Can you say your age at all?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. In fact, there will be cases that have been discussed at the symposium with people who were in an accident and they get a settlement, and before they know it, they're conserved.
Right.
You know what I mean? All it takes is for someone with the right legal connection to see that you're coming into money or to think that you're coming into money. Or in the case of somebody involved with mine, she's just crazy. She was abusive. You know, she's crazy. So I can't really say what's in her mind, but she engaged in a lot of really inappropriate other behaviors.
Right.
She
and
could
a lot
be
of
just
people
doing it for other reasons.
You sound kind of middle-aged because they said you're not an elderly person.
I'm in my 50s now. I'm in my 50s.
Right, and we've had quite a few people on our show that were in there being conserved. That's young, to tell you the truth. That's young.
No, really, this whole thing was concocted when I was, like, late 20s, early 30s.
Oh,
I was conserved. By the time I was 35, I was already conserved and already having trouble getting health care. It's just lucky for me that I didn't have anything life-threatening. Eventually, I did develop a cancer, and I had to actually travel to get it diagnosed. Before my father fessed up about what was there, he started telling me that I should maybe consider getting my health care abroad. I mean, it was very, very – I was like, well, why would you – it was very odd, you know.
Go ahead.
Sure.
Go ahead, Hillary.
Who was your conservator or guardian?
Okay, so
was it a family
you know what?
Member?
I am not even allowed access to my papers, right? But I know that this woman, Amy, who's now a lawyer, who really is, I mean, I tell a little bit at the symposium I'm working on, you know, the things that she did, and then my brother, the one with a legal problem of his own, which caused him to have to resign his bar license.
It's got to be very stressful on you. And just think that on our radio show over the last 5 years, I think we've had like five people that have come to us in guardianship and conservatorship that had to actually fled the United States of America because they were being conserved on and left all their inheritances behind. They left their families.
Right.
They left their homes just to have their freedom. I mean, it's
exactly.
It's got to be,
you can't put a price on your freedom. And not only that, but seriously, I mean, I developed a lump, right, in my breast, and I went in, and this conservator had been, according to members, you know, people who finally gave me more and more details, she had been filling my medical record with lies, like as an entertainment, you know. I went in and, what do I know? Like, I'm this incapacitated person, right? So, you know, basically I got blown off by two separate medical providers. And I don't mean to blame them, actually, but I came to Ireland and I went in and I said, I have a lump. They're like, oh, yeah, you do. And then they did a mammogram and they're like, oh, it's not showing on the mammogram. And then they did an ultrasound. They're like, it's barely showing. But they did a biopsy because they could feel it was a palpable lump. They could feel it. It was an invasive cancer. It was a lobular carcinoma, and they don't show up well on the mammogram. So actually, it was a little dicey, but I was then able to come back to the U.S. as a foreign patient and go for care for cancer. And see, this is, you could see how awkward this was. Like, I came back, and it's like, what's this incapacitated woman? She got herself diagnosed abroad, and my doctor in Dublin, you know, gave me a referral to a very, very good surgeon who was head of the cancer service, actually, the surgery. My son, who was in his senior year of high school, my youngest child, he had asked me if I could possibly try to still be home for his senior year. And I think that the guardian or conservator's ability to interfere with me when I had a, you know, a diagnosis of cancer, I think it created a situation where they had to back off, at least until the cancer was treated. So I had surgery and I had radiation and everything, and very soon after the treatment ended, I hightailed it out of the country. But you're right. I mean, there's nothing is as valuable as your freedom. And I think that your civil rights, your freedom, your right to speak out, your right to get another opinion, your right to hire an attorney to defend yourself. I mean, you lose all these things.
Yeah, and you have a really valuable story that lets people know that you're not only younger generation, but you're also, you had to flee the country, come back, get medical surgery, and then go back again. I mean, then you come into the United States, which you're coming into a foreign country. I mean, this is just one of the most stars I have ever heard, you know, on our show. But this shows to you what conservatorship and guardianship, what it all entitles. Is this not elderly people? Is this not disabled? It's any age, okay? And that's where our symposium that Dr. Sam Sugar is putting on for the symposium, we're going to be talking about with all these different people that have been conserved and guardianshiped in different ages, and they're going to be telling their stories. It's going to be very, very powerful. So anybody wants to do, you know, come to that AAPG Guardianship Symposium. Dr. Sam Sugar is offering free tickets for that. So please.
I think it's really important, actually, because.
Right.
Yeah.
Get your family members.
I think that, you know.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry.
Well, what I was trying to say is just get your free tickets if you want to go in there and go to his website. It's aaapg.net, and he'll be talking about the symposium, and I think you can apply for tickets on there. Ask Dr. Sam Sugar. You can send him a message on there as well. He will hook you up to come on to this, you know, to listen to the symposium. But everybody that has an estate, anybody that's young, anybody that's old, this is for every single American and abroad American, international level, that everybody needs to understand that we are in a horrible time right now where a lot of our estates are being stolen, our families are being stolen through the court process. So, and a lot of people don't believe it. They just do not believe that. I mean, I listened to your story.
You're absolutely right. And
I was just blown
away.
I am still. Okay?
Yeah, I apologize for, let me just add, you're absolutely right. My situation is unusual, right, granted, but I think that the value of actually going to this thing, and it's Zoom, you don't have to travel to go. You get your free ticket, and you listen, and you learn more about it. The value of it is that you can hear different stories, how it happened to different people, because apparently it's a growth industry. Some people have figured out you can make so much money from this. So don't just hear my story. My story is odd, you know what I mean, but at least I'm free to speak up. The thing is that there are other victims with different circumstances, and if you can come to recognize the setup, you're not going to be as likely to fall into it, and your family members won't be, you know. So it's like just the way we have to educate ourselves. If I said, oh, you know, there are some counterfeit bills out there in circulation, you know, they're not all counterfeit. Like, analogously, I'm not saying that all conservatorships are bad or wrong or fraudulent, you know, but there are some, right? You want to know how to recognize that so that you don't get stuck with one of those bad bills or you don't get caught in whatever the scam of the year is. And I think enough people, as bad as what happened to me when it did, I think, unfortunately, the awareness of the predators is increasing perhaps faster than the awareness of the public who really need to be aware so they can protect themselves. And you're not going to lose anything by listening. You know, you get your free ticket, you go, and you hear a number of stories, and you'll come out of that much better able to defend yourself so that it doesn't happen to you or your mom or some other, you know, person you care about.
Yeah, I know, and it's frightful. And hearing your story, and you're going to be having some videos, and you're going to be also talking on there. So I encourage everybody to, like I said, get some tickets and come on. It's going to be the virtual. It's on Zoom, virtual, and it's the 2021 AAPG Guardianship Symposium put on by Dr. Sam Sugar. And like I said, it's going to be in two sessions. Sunday, April 11th, 2021, and then starting at 6 p.m., and Monday, April 12th, 2021, and I'm not sure what session you're going to be in, but it's going to be both, and we've got like over 24, I think, something like that, people coming on, and there's going to be the problems in the guardianship abuse, and it's going to be a variety of leaders from law enforcement, social media, medicine, nursing, TV and radio, legal practices, judicial reform. We've got private investigations. And we've got, this is going to be a huge symposium. So I want to encourage everybody to come on and listen to these stories. Go ahead.
Right. And Lynn, you've done so much work to get the word out. And there is absolutely no reason that anyone should not be attending this Zoom symposium summit. Because it is free. If anyone needs free tickets, you can contact me at 239-682-4234.
Yeah, you're starting to fade in and out.
Again.
Yeah. You're starting to fade in and out. Can you try to get back into somewhere where we can hear you?
Sure. Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
I'll give my number at the end of the show, and you can go on to Face Us. And we will request tickets for you. So there's no excuse for anyone not to attend. Family members, friends, guardians, attorneys, everyone. It is a public health crisis that is happening in the probate guardianship court. So I thank Luann as well as other activists for getting the word out.
Right. And like
thank
I said,
you,
anybody does know. Yeah. And like I say, if anybody doesn't know how to get a hold of Dr. Sam Sugar, you can always reach me. My name is Luann Fleming. You can find me on Facebook, Families Against Court Embezzlement, Unethical Standards, Face Us. You can also reach me at Face Us Radio, FACEUS Radio at hotmail.com. I will be glad to answer any questions that you have about this. So make sure you contact me there, and please, you know, if I don't answer you right away, don't get upset. I've just been slammed this whole week with doing speeches, getting ready for the symposium. And then we also have a big speech coming up for the Supreme Court here in Colorado, so I'm working on that as well. And we've got some news media that are coming in as well. So I'm like, I've been hit from all ends of this happening, but this is getting really good. Now, I know that you're in Ireland right now, and I know it's, what, about 2 in the morning there?
It's very late. It's after 2, so I'm actually going to sign off because I also know that you have some legal experts and other people who have, you know, different understanding of different aspects of this beyond, like, my understanding is just as somebody who's a victim of it. I'm not a lawyer or anything. You know what I mean? So given that it's after 2 in the morning here, thank you very much for inviting me on the show, and I really hope that everyone listening will listen to, you know, heed Luann's call to please get those tickets and go to the symposium. You can do it from the comfort of your own living room. Please go. It's really worth it. It's important. And thank you very much. And have a nice evening, everyone. And it was really nice talking to all of you.
And thank you.
All right. Good night. Bye.
God bless you. We love you. You know, you were all kind of joined at the hip at this because we all can feel each other's their emotions and their pain and the love that they have for their families. And we're all like one big family that has been through some of the most torturous times, but yet you've met some wonderful people in the process, you know, and I've met people all over the country, internationally as well. So I hope everybody joins us on the symposium. We've got another guest coming on tonight, and she's going to be on the symposium, and she is a probate attorney. We're going to bring her on. She is on next, and then we're going to bring Rick Black on. So, Rick, you better hang on with us, sir. Anyway, Lisa McCarley is with us.
Hi. Lisa? How are you? Yeah.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi. How are you? Hi. How
yeah,
are you?
Yeah, you are so, a probate attorney out there in, what is it, Los Angeles? Where are you exactly?
Yeah, Los Angeles. Yes, the biggest court system in the world. Yes.
Yeah, and you've been doing fantastic work out there, getting the word out, and you've really stepped up to the plate, and you are a probate attorney, and you get to see a lot of this going on, and you've also been with the Free Brittany movement as well, and you're going to be at the symposium. So go ahead, let's start there. Why do you think this is important for everybody to join us?
Well, it is important. I refer to myself as being, very boring because I have to talk about laws and so forth. But, this has certainly affected me and my career because I'm a very empathetic person. So when I see family separation and family separation is torture. And really, it's the worst thing that you can possibly do. And something about the American justice system is dysfunctional because whenever we try to control or manipulate people for whatever reason, whether it's a criminal activity or a fight against conservatorship, the go-to move is family separation. And just, frankly, over the years, I just realized I just couldn't tolerate it. I just couldn't be a part of the system. And I had enough insight 10, 12 years ago to push back and away from the system. But because you kind of get gaslit, and, I can really relate to some of these victims, all of my colleagues were participating and being court-appointed counsel, and I just couldn't imagine involving myself in that. And so I began to advocate against the system of judges picking their favorites. I call it cronyism. I think that is the right word for it. That is one of the first things that has to go. We have to separate lawyers and judges. We have to make it super clear that judges don't get to pick their favorites over and over again in these proceedings. So I had actually begun, and still a very fledgling project of mine is a charity called Betty's Hope. And my thought was to put together an independent group of lawyers, a competent curriculum, and provide supervision and accountability of my colleagues so that they don't just kind of go off and do whatever it is that they want to do to whomever they want to do it. And so when COVID hit, all the work I had been doing in terms of going to see politicians, all of that got shut down. So in my depression, in my feeling, very frustrated, a young man named Kevin Wu called me and said, there's going to be a Free Brittany rally. Would you come? And, of course, I have nothing to do, like the whole rest of us, in July of 2020. And I walked into this rally, and he hands me a pink megaphone. So here I am in front of the courthouse that I work in for the last 25 years, but I have this pink megaphone, and all of my anger and all of my frustration comes out, and somehow the young people, they got it, And so we began to talk and align our objectives, but the real miracle was that the young people were like, well, you're a lawyer. We're not lawyers. We don't think there's a valid conservatorship here. Britney Spears can perform. She can be a judge on a talent show. She can certainly feed, clothe, and shelter herself. Can you look at some documents for us? And I did. I studied the documents, and shockingly, she was deprived of her own attorney. She was deprived of getting the documents. So what Jennifer is saying is very, very true, and it does happen. And, you know, the movie I Care a Lot reflects, you know, a woman that was quite capable, and she got conserved in secret. And
right.
that's what happened to Brittany. So this is important because our state laws do not provide for this. This is, to me, layers and layers of incompetence. Judges not knowing what they're doing, lawyers going around making up rules to put themselves in these lucrative positions of being court-appointed counsel, another group of lawyers calling themselves guardian ad litem. But the reality is that there is no competent training, supervision, or accountability of any of these people. And that's,
wow.
to me, that's the most important thing. But I know that for a fact because I have been going around for 2 years asking politicians, asking judges, who's responsible for this? And
mm-hmm.
judges are the ones picking their favorites and training their favorites, and they're the ones that have never practiced in conservatorship or they've never had to study the probate code. They should not be going around and trying to pretend that they can teach. So,
right.
Say something real quick first. So do you think I have people pounding me on this thing wanting me to ask you questions? And they
sure.
want to know. So do you think it's more of an educational problem that they have with these probate courts than more like a corrupt court? Do you think it's, you know, because a lot
yeah,
of people say, I'm totally corrupt, you know, and I'm like, well, no, wait
yeah.
a minute, it could be. Because of the educational that a lot of these people don't have, you know, there's a line there, you know.
Exactly. Such a great question. So I can answer this way. You know, I've worked in the court system for 25 years. I went to law school. I was probably the only attorney in the world that would admit this. I met my ex-husband, but, you know, then still my best friend, Mark McCarley, and his partner, Walter Rosen, before I went to law school. And they encouraged me to go to law school because Walter was going to be retiring and he wanted somebody to take over his probate and conservatorship, his practice. And I fell in love with Mark. Obviously, I got married. And so I loved it. I loved the idea of spending my career helping people through a very difficult sojourn. You know, the transition to incapacity and aging is very difficult for families because you're losing your parent or you're losing a grandparent or sometimes a child, you know, who may still be present with you, but because of some type of brain injury or assault to the brain, they're not the same person, right? So very, very painful
right.
stuff. And I really
right.
just wanted to help and facilitate protection and guidance to those families. I never thought that I would be here in 2021 telling people that the probate courts are broken. But in all of those years, I would swear on my life, I have never heard of a judge asking for or receiving compensation for giving people positions. And especially over the last 2 years where all of my colleagues have received emails from me and all of my colleagues and all the judges in downtown LA, they are all aware of what I am saying, what I am trying to bring to
mm-hmm.
the public's attention. They're aware because, you know, I'm, you know, basically on all the social media. They have to be, right? They're not all living under rocks and stones. So
right.
and even with my, shall we say, notoriety in Los Angeles, California, about what I'm doing to bring attention to what I call a dysfunctional probate court, not a single person has ever said to me, oh, you know, we pay off this judge or these attorneys pay bribes or anything that I would call graft or corruption. Now, if you
right.
said to me, do I see incompetence and cronyism and misogyny all day long? I mean, those are the three words that I use to describe it, with incompetence meaning I don't know the law, I don't understand the disease. I don't understand the family dynamic. You know, that all day long. I have kept files and records and literally I have boxes that I hope one day to be placed under oath, either in mm-hmm. the California judicial evaluation, or maybe if we're lucky, we get Congress, Jerry Nadler, and we'll talk about that in a minute. I would love to tell people what I've seen in terms of trying to get it right, but not having the tools, not having the expertise, not even having a command of the law. And that incompetence can be just as cruel and just as debilitating and traumatizing as mm-hmm. misfeasance, right? I'm sorry, malfeasance. Do you know a gentleman named Charles M. Blow? He's a New York Times journalist, and he's very active in terms of civil rights, really a beautiful, brilliant man. And there's mm-hmm. a quote that I absolutely love, and he says, "One does not have to act with great malice to cause great harm. The absence of empathy and understanding are sufficient." I mean, isn't that, to me, that says it all. It's like you don't have to be malicious. You can just be incompetent and cause the same level of harm. And I really think that if you're a judge and you're getting out of bed and you're schlepping into court and listening to these people, that is a hard job. It's hard. It would be hard on me emotionally and physically. They're not sitting there trying to figure out ways to hurt you, but they don't understand. They don't understand what the role of the attorneys are. They don't understand even what the petitions say. So in LA County, our judges have created this whole policy and procedure, I call it, of like having these attorneys write reports. I mean, basically, the judges have relinquished authority to court-appointed counsel. And these are the people that need to be educated, supervised, and held accountable for what they are doing. So that there's basically, in difficult cases, you have a group of lawyers sitting around a table saying, okay, what is the ethical standards that apply in this case? You know, what is the appropriate response to these questions? Because mm-hmm. nobody's sitting around doing that. They're just making up shit. That's what I call it. I call it the land of make-believe in probate court in L.A.
Yeah, wow.
So, you know, that's
you know,
what
you've
I
been
see.
Doing this. You've been doing this for 25 years. So, have you seen it gotten worse in the last 10 years, or do you think it's always been bad?
All right, I think it's gotten much worse, much worse. And now I'm going to be, you know, with you. You know that I run very honest. I don't always say what people want to hear, but I will tell you my truth. So the truth is, why did it get worse? And that is because when good lawyers like myself, I figured out, oh, my God, you know, what's going on here is terrible. I don't want to be a court-appointed attorney. I don't want to participate in committing elder abuse and basically fraud on these families. You will see that I backed out of this and said, I'm not going to do it. But people still do it. People with economic need, people who don't have the ethics. So I would say that the people who show up, who do court-appointed counsel, are not the ones that are doing it for the right reasons. I think a lot of them do it for pure financial gain or because it's easy or maybe it's the only kind of work that they do. Let me push it to like a whole nother level. When you are a society, and we are a society of go along to get along, the vast majority of people most of the time will go along with the crowd, whatever, you know, what people are doing. You know, if you see somebody wearing, I don't know, hoodies, for example, right? Everybody then starts wearing hoodies or whatever, or hats, whatever it is. We should want to be like our friends. So lawyers are the same thing. They see what other lawyers are doing. But when you see people doing something that is ethically dubious, like writing reports in Los Angeles County, the better people will not participate. And the interesting thing to me is that most of my colleagues do not participate in the court-appointed attorney program, which, of course, makes it look like cronyism when the same people continue to show up. But here's what I think happened. Ultimately, when Nazis started being the worst possible creatures on earth, there were still people that showed up to be Nazis. They didn't care about what they were doing to other people. They cared about maybe their money or prestige or whatever. So, and I'm not saying that we're all, you know, the probate court-appointed attorneys are that bad, but if you're willing to do something unethical or if you're willing to do things that are untoward because a judge tells you to do this or because your other friends are doing it, you know, what does that say about you? So the group of people willing to be court-appointed attorneys in Los Angeles gets smaller because most people are fundamentally good people. Most people want to do the right thing. And now you have a concentrated group of people who I think are acting in a rather ethically dubious fashion. Am I making any sense? So that's why it tends to get worse. We have less ethical people operating because they're willing to justify or rationalize what they should not be justifying and what they should not be rationalizing. And this is a process that has happened, I think, over the last decade.
So have you, since you've been doing this, though, some of our listeners want to know if you've been retaliated on, because we've had other attorneys on our shows that they have been retaliated on. So we're just trying to figure out if they've done that to you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have a court of appeals case which calls me out for being unethical and blah, blah, blah. And, yeah, so in a two-minute explanation, a little old man is himself a victim. He gives all of the family property. So he gives away the property to his caregiver. He hires me because his stepson sues him. You know, the famous love affair between people and their stepfathers and stepmothers and so forth. I bring all of the property that there is to return. I bring it back into the trust. You know, back into the estate. He has agreed with me, the caregiver, everybody has agreed. I've put all of the property back into the trust, but the conservator, then I basically said, well, we don't need a conservator, we don't need a professional fiduciary. She got mad that I kicked her out because I fixed it. And to make a long story short, I recovered $500,000 of assets. The judge only awarded me $77,000. The conservator and her attorney did nothing but accountings and bullshit and discovery. They got nothing back because I had already gotten it all back, and they got $40,000 in fees. So, yes, I would call that, again, incompetence, cronyism, and misogyny. But I will say something that might be helpful if there are other lawyers. Since I've gone loud and since I've gone proud, you know, meaning that I'm letting the whole world know I am going to reform the probate courts. I met with my state senator, Anthony Portantino. I looked him in the eye. I said, I don't know if you're going to help me. I don't know how this is going to happen, but I'm going to fix this. I'm going to be part of fixing
That's
the
good.
Probate courts. And not a single judge has done anything, and, you know, just between us, you and me and a few hundred people, I have been outrageous. I wrote in a pleading once that the probate court in Riverside was the land of make-believe, and the court-appointed attorney was like, Your Honor, she called your courtroom the land of make-believe. And you know what? The judge just looked at him and said, yeah, okay. Nobody's done anything to me.
Yeah.
Huh?
But you know what? You're standing up and you speaking about this is extremely important. And that's why I brought you onto the radio show, because I've talked to many attorneys and I love the attorneys that's been on the radio shows that are good people like you. And we support every single one of them on our radio show. And the thing I want to ask you
exactly.
is...
Exactly, and it's going to happen. More will come out when they realize that I'm safe. They'll realize. Mm-hmm. Because here's my theory. These judges do want to get it right. You just don't work that hard and then sit there and go, oh, I'm going to spend my day. They just don't know. You know, even the judge in the Britney Spears case. I mean, the first judge back in 2008, you know, I might have some questions about her personality, but even as I sit here now and I want to, like, just go, what were you thinking? I don't think she was thinking, I'm going to put the screws to Britney Jean Spears. You know, I can't.
And to tell you the truth, Lisa, we all partied when we were younger. We've all done all kinds of stuff when we were younger.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that you have to be conserved. I mean, it's
No,
I was wild. I must admit, when I was younger. Okay, I'm just going to come out. I was wild, okay? But conserved is a different thing, okay? That's taking away someone's rights and their responsibilities and everything. So for fighting for Britney Spears and Kevin Wu stepping in, Kevin Wu has been doing this Free Britney Spears. He had a really good, like a symposium. A couple months ago, he did a really good job on that.
He's brilliant. I mean, young people, but yeah, they're brilliant. Brilliant and beautiful. Beautiful inside and out. It's just absolutely such an honor, you know, to in any way get their attention. And we have worked very closely together to sort of unravel this whole mystery. And again, that this might be one of the worst conservatorships I've ever seen, and hopefully there'll be a documentary, the follow-up to Framing Britney Spears. The next documentary should be called Britney Spears Was Framed. It really should be.
Yeah, I agree with you. So a lot of the listeners are asking me, they're like, wow, do you have other attorneys that are willing to help you, and how many do you have? And they're like, you know, everyone's like, you go, girl.
there's actually about a half. Right now, I count about a half a dozen of us who are really willing to, talk about it and push back against the judges. I suspect that as this becomes more mainstream, and that's the beautiful thing about, it's like sort of like the chicken or the egg. It's like the Free Britney movement brought social media into what we're doing. And by the way, if you're listening, you know, again, I'm not a real social media. I'm not really a public person for the most part, but at Lisa McCarley, if you happen to have Instagram or if you have a millennial who happens to be Instagram, push the social media narrative, because believe it or not, the politicians are paying attention. And the young people are so smart. I mean, they get how to connect with each other. So when I first showed up, I'm getting greetings from South Africa, from England, from Brazil. I mean, it's just such an honor. I mean, it really is like such a wonderful feeling. So come on in. You know, join the party. Don't be afraid of social media. Just come and watch. But you too, you should be on Twitter a little bit more, because I noticed that we need to bring your followers up, your numbers.
Yeah,
and I can reach out to each other. It's a connection.
And I really need someone to come in that's willing out there, that's willing to help me do this, because I'm a one-man person right now, and I do have advocates all over the place, and don't get me wrong. I'm trying to get all this stuff up, and we also need our website put back up, but I'm not good at any of that social media stuff. You know, I do have a Twitter account. You know, it's a Families Against Porn Embezzlement Unethical Standards Face Us, and I do post on there. But, yes, if I had, you know, other advocates that want to come on and help me, I would have an Instagram. I would have our website back up, you know, and I'm trying to get YouTube going on as well, to put all the faces of people over there that have been abused and stuff. That's my next journey.
Exactly. Well, actually, I already have a YouTube channel. for Betty's mm-hmm. Hope, my charity. So if somebody wants to post a video, just get in touch, send it to me or get in touch with me, and you can use lisamccarley@yahoo.com. So that's one mm-hmm. way. But also, just go ahead. There's a company called Hire My Mom. So here's a plug for Hire My Mom. They have a lot of young people who are the millennials, and they know how to do everything, and they're willing to do it very reasonably. Hire My Mom is a great resource for those baby boomers, you, me. I have no idea, but they do.
Right.
They'll help you out there. But social media,
right.
connecting, because reaching each other, and look at how much more progress Rick and Sam, Tom Coleman, mm-hmm. When we all started to getting together and finding other people, families, people like you, look
mm-hmm.
at how much stronger we are together.
Yeah,
it's wonderful.
If anybody's out there and you want to help me with some of these websites or answering some of my phone calls, I will bring you in. I mean, I am serious. I am.
Yeah,
please.
Volunteer for FACES. It's
yeah,
good.
Volunteer,
yes, exactly.
And that feeling, right? You'll agree with me, Lisa. And same thing with you, Hillary, how good it feels to actually get the word out. And you really do feel stronger. You tell your story internationally. You know, like everybody knows my
mm-hmm.
my story. A lot of people do. But you know what? If it wasn't for this radio show, to tell you the truth, I don't know what I would have done. Because I was hurting.
Mm-hmm.
After my mom was taken and I lost all the property mm-hmm. my family ever owned, you know, and it just killed me. It was just painful. But
mm-hmm.
you know what? I decided
mm-hmm.
to get up and do something about it. That's why I want somebody to get up, do something about it, help us out, help out Dr. Sam, help out Rick Black. He's going to be coming on next as one of our guests on tonight with Sierra.
Exactly, exactly.
He's
mm-hmm.
going to be coming on.
Right.
We're going to bring him on here in about 2 minutes, and I want you to stay with
right.
us live, okay? In fact, let's go ahead and just do that now. Rick, are you with us? Hold on. And I know Hillary's still with us. I'm not sure where Robin is. Rick?
I'm here.
Yeah, hi, Rick.
How you doing?
Everybody, this is for our listeners. This is Rick Black. He is with us. He is actually a phenomenal, what you want to say, an advocate for the elderly, the disabled, guardianship abuse. He also runs an organization, a Center for State Administration Reform. And his name is Rick Black. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Thanks, Luann. Hi, Lisa.
Hi,
hey.
Hi, Rick. How are you, dear?
We also have Hillary
Mr. Malfeasance, and Lisa
right.
is Misfeasance.
Yes. We also have Hillary Hogue, and everybody, I want to let the listeners know you're listening to FACES Radio, and I usually have Robin Austin on with us. I'm not sure exactly where he's at. He's probably doing his symposium speech. I'm not sure, but we're all rushing to get everything done by tomorrow. And so go ahead, Rick. Lisa's going to stay on with us, and so is Hillary. So come and talk to us. Why this symposium is so important?
Well, I think between Jennifer and you and Lisa, you very succinctly described why it's important. We're getting the word out every day. The percentage of enlightened folks in the 320 million Americans is growing every day because of the work that all of us are doing. And, you know, we have our tiffs between the different factions of the activists and advocates, but, you know, for the most part, what I've seen is we're being more and more diverse in our approach. We're being more and more tolerant in accepting that, you know, there's all kinds of ways to communicate to the public. And the most important thing that we're all doing is just that, communicating
mm-hmm.
to the public that this is a very real issue. It is growing. Matter of fact, everything Lisa said, I agree with, as well as Jennifer. I thought she made some very insightful comments. Our role
yeah.
here at SEER is a bit different. We've been in the game now for 8 years. We spend 60% of our time, 7 days a week, taking calls from all over the country. giving people unconventional advice on how to deal with the reality that they're faced with, either themselves or with a loved one, a spouse, a parent, a child, a sibling. And then we try to carve out as much time as we can to communicate to the legislative branch and the executive branch, and namely law enforcement, to continue to educate leadership that, look, this is real and we got to do something about it. It's one thing to educate the public so that they aren't walking into these law offices and courtrooms completely naive to what is routine. But ultimately, and that's why Terry and I, my wife and I, started SEER, we've got to create redress and reform. Redress being, granted, most lawyers are good, most guardians are good, but I want lawyers going to jail and others who take advantage of the vulnerable, seniors and disabled adults, and I want reforms that truly change the horizon, so that these atrocities are reduced significantly. You know, to Lisa's comment, I'm with her on this. I think most judges are completely overwhelmed and underprepared when they take the bench. I don't think there's grasp, and I've had numerous discussions with FBI agents all over the country, and we'll be on another call with a couple tomorrow. And everyone routinely will ask, Rick, do you have any proof of public corruption? Nope. Nope. I don't think that's there at all. But
yeah.
I do have proof of constructive fraud, lying, perjuring, either in arguments, but definitely in petitions, which is signed as an affidavit, and to be truthful, that they are routinely presenting false information to a judge to inappropriately conscript someone, most often to traffic their estate. But, you know, we're seeing crimes for Medicaid fraud, for health facility risk mitigation. I mean, Hillary and I were on a call with the controller of Orange County, Florida, today. It was a wonderful call, about an audit that they did on their probate court, and very revealing about the mismanagement of the court. And most concerning was when he finished his audit and he took it to the clerk of courts for that county. She pretty much said, thanks, I appreciate your opinion, but I'm not going to improve anything. We like the mismanagement the way it is. And so then the discussion was, well, do you think law enforcement's going to do anything? And the answer was no. And do you think that you're going to take this to the Capitol, Tallahassee, to try to get more funding or something to move this into a better space? And the answer was no. And so, you know, what we recognize as an organization is that we serve a very real purpose in educating leadership that these problems do exist with the FBI, with law enforcement, that, look, these are crimes. You know, Martha Stewart went to prison for lying. Michael Cohen went to prison for lying. Others have gone to prison for lying. The attorneys who commit these frauds know exactly what they're doing. The attorneys who exploited my father-in-law and caused him to die in the home of his exploiter, his feet black with gangrene, knew exactly what they were doing when they isolated him the last 2.5 years of his life and cost his family over $1 million. So that's malfeasance. I excuse the judges. The attorneys, never. They know exactly what they're doing, and the crimes are growing. So
right. And Rick, wouldn't you say that was compatible with my assessment, which is that as the attorneys, there are fewer and fewer ethical attorneys showing up to take these appointments. So, yes, I see a lot of, like, just things that are outrageous being done, and the fees being done, and the pretense that's going on, and how these lawyers justify it. But, you know, understand that was why I wouldn't do it. I just didn't want to participate in any of that.
No, hey Lisa, we've spent a lot of time on the phone over the last mm-hmm. couple of years, and you and I are very much aligned on everything you've said, and I love the tag team that we did on the state legislators there in California today in our notes to them, because it was perfect. I'm coming at this from a victim advocate perspective and a layman. You're coming at it from a victim advocate perspective and a lawyer. And to show the synergy that we both had on the topic, but to come at it from both avenues, and then, of course, the avenue that Kevin and the team at Free Brittany comes at it. And you know, we again, back to the diversity. Some of those bills were proffered by others within the movement, CEDAR. And that's great because it created a platform that those three state senators and the assemblymen are now listening and elevating proposed bills. They don't hit the mark from my perspective, but it creates a dialogue. And that's what I love about that whole process and the interchange we had there today, because we're educating leadership that's only been hearing a parroted narrative coming from the Fiduciaries Bureau, the conservators lobbyist group, the leaders of the state bar that are all saying, and the judges' conferences, who are all saying, hey, the system works perfect, and you really don't understand how dysfunctional these families are. And within all of that parroted narrative, our story hasn't been heard until really now. So we got a lot of work to do. Yeah, everything you're saying, Lisa, is right. Look, I call it maintenance over morality, but the go-along, get-along attitude, hey, that's been around since the beginning of time. You know, Eve ate the apple, and everybody had to hide. So, okay, I get it. That's what happened. But thank God there are courageous people throughout history, David, George Washington, Lisa McCarley, that you know, you finally look around and you go, hey, this isn't the Allies in World War II, to use your Holocaust comparison. This is wrong. This is immoral. And most of us see it for that, but only the courageous are going to change it. And everybody on this phone tonight, everybody, you know, on Luann's team, we're practicing our courage. And I just want to continue to encourage that and have more people join the Army, because we need an Army to get where we want to go.
Right, and I've been told, you know, I've had some people use our radio show, some attorneys use our radio show lately, saying that we are an organization that hates attorneys and we hate some guardians, we hate conservators, and we hate judges, but that is absolutely not true. Our job, what we're doing here, is trying to not have those corrupted people, or who knows who they are, that are hurting these elderly people or the disabled people. We love good attorneys. We love good judges. We love, you know, they have that all wrong. We're not here to condemn any of them. We don't condemn what we don't like, what some of them are doing against our family members. But like you talk about it, it could be an educational issue that they are having instead of like being paid under the table, like a lot of people are thinking that's what's going on.
Right. And so, if I could interject, Luann and Rick, and any attorneys and judges that we as victims and advocates slash activists deem as good, we have them on our radio show. We are eager to promote them, and we know who they are: Ron Denman, Leslie Federico, big time, Vito Ropo, Phil Ross.
Phil Ross.
You know, the nice lady who's on the show listening right now. Of course, we are eager to promote her and to get her as much business as possible. But when someone is not doing what is in the best interest of the potential ward or conservatee, we will tell the public not to use that person.
So I had to say that because, you know, I don't want these attorneys coming on that are not some of the good attorneys saying, you know, these people are haters. We are not. We are definitely not those kind of people.
Absolutely
we want
not.
Word out.
We love everyone.
Right. Right. We want the word out that we have a crisis going on, a human health crisis
right.
going on, you
right.
know, through our,
right.
our court system. And we want
right.
to have it changed. We want it across the nation. We want it to happen everywhere because everybody has the right to live their life, especially the elderly people, the disabled people, our veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody has the right to live their life, give their property to whom they want to. You know, they
exactly.
have the right. They have the right to do whatever they want. You know. Because it's their property, it's their kids, it's whatever. But like I said, the intergeneral transmission of health and wealth, we need that among everybody. And it's crazy to think about, you know, how we have to come together and get, you know, our health to our elderly people. Some of them are not even, they're being put in these guardianships and they're not being taken care of. You know, I've heard so many horrific stories, and I'm so grateful for my advocates that come on here. You know, Lisa and Rick and Dr. Sam, Nazca, Marty Oakley, I can keep naming them all, Gretchen Rachel Hammond, whoever. They all come on, and they're talking about the abuses that we have. We have to keep educating people. That's why this seminar is
right.
so important.
Right. Right.
So Rick, what are you going to basically be talking about at the symposium? Can you kind of give us an idea? Is it going to be like the same stuff? Do you have anything up your sleeve that you can come up with? I mean, like, and you know, a lot of people have heard you before, but what are you going to talk to the first time people that are going to come on there?
Great question.
Same? Is it the same? Is it the same? I mean, is it, oh, you got to be careful, you know?
We're going to talk about Sears platforms and where we're trying to take the organization by creating chapters in as many states as possible, broadening our leadership team, broadening our field team who actually interfaces with victims. We do some things unconventionally that we don't talk about publicly because I don't want the enemy to know how we really approach these. You know, we're approaching nearly 4,000 cases that we've either counseled or investigated since 2014, and you learn a lot from that many discussions with that many victims, and you figure out what works and what doesn't work. And we feel, you know, we're still less than 1% successful on, you know, reestablishing folks' freedom, but I'll take my 1%, even though it's a terrible batting average, because I'm convinced that the work we do brings value and has helped people that they otherwise wouldn't have gotten the help or wouldn't have gotten their freedom back. But we're going to talk
without a doubt,
what we're doing on the four corners. You know, we've strategically taken a position with California, Texas, New York, Florida, that, you know, we have a view that if we can move the needle there on redress and reforms, other states will follow. Those
right.
states
mm-hmm.
have significant senior population. They have significant problems with trust, probate, and adult guardianship frauds, estate trafficking. And, you know, to help your listeners, what we have come to counsel is family members who are being exploited by predatory attorneys. They do that outside of probate. They do it with trust frauds. They do it with durable power of attorney frauds. They do it with others. And the sad part, other than, you know, the dozen that we work with nationwide, including Lisa, most attorneys won't admit that these frauds occur routinely. So we provide that insight. You think this is happening? Let me help you. It is happening, and it's going to get worse, and here's what you need to do to get ahead of the curve. So again, the counseling part will always be a major platform for SEER, but getting with leadership with a primary focus on the Attorney General of each of those four cornered states and working with strategic partners that we have or are forming in those efforts is a major part of our platform moving forward, including what we're doing in Washington, D.C. The letter writing campaign that we're leveraging with Representatives Jordan and Gates and Stube from Florida to Jerry Nadler of New York, that's just a part of a much bigger effort to try to get sessions in on the Hill during this administration that really gets appropriate resources on this. I mean, yesterday, President Biden signed in $400 billion that's going to go to home health care and protections for the disabled and seniors. That infusion hasn't been seen in the last 30 years in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Well, we want to be a part of making sure that that money gets put to the very best use, because from what I see in all the calls that we take, there's a lot of inefficiency out there. And that those mismanaged organizations will be more than happy to waste this additional $400 billion. So we're hoping that with our effort, you know, running at the very highest levels within Washington, that we're going to get some attention on this and really get some dollars put to use that create the reforms that we need nationwide. Fighting this thing at 50 states and 6 U.S. territories, Luann, I'll be long dead before we achieve the reforms that we seek. So having a presence in Washington, D.C. is rather critical. You know, we've been working up there since 2015. The pandemic slowed us down quite a bit, but we're already reestablishing those contacts with the new administration, and we feel very comfortable that we'll get that agenda going again.
Right, and Rick, if I could just add one thing as a member of SEER, that the one thing that the pandemic did give us is a whole new look on the court system and the hearings. You know, we were able to attend many more hearings throughout the country than in normal times. So, I mean, that was a good thing, and I'm very confident. A year ago, not as many meetings as we're having now. So with organizations like SEER, we are doing a lot better, and we are helping more people than we have in the past.
Mm-hmm. A great point, Hillary.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we're watching sometimes multiple hearings every day. I mean, today I was on 2 separate hearings. And
me too.
And I know you were on one with me, Luann. So,
I know I was on one with you today, and it's very interesting because, oh my gosh, that's a hair-raising experience. You know what I mean.
But here's what's great. We're all, you know, Hillary and I are talking almost every day and have for a couple of years now. You know, it's great to watch the growth. We're all getting more comfortable talking to a judge, talking in a hearing, you know, being respectful, but making our presence known. And it's great to watch the judges for sure, but more importantly, the attorneys, how anxious they get when they realize, holy cow, there's that Hillary Hogue again.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, she's the one that has Adam Walzer of ABC News' ear, or she was in Tampa Bay Times.
And
guess
we're not
what,
going
folks?
Anywhere.
A spotlight, rats don't like light. They flee. And a lot of these folks are rats, and we are putting a spotlight on them. And I just encourage all your listeners, you know, those court watchers out there, we got to keep it up.
Right, and you know, even if you're busy, just put the Zoom channel on and let it go, and just let it go, and let them know you're there. You know, I've done that on a 3-day trial this week, between writing my symposium, you know, writing to the Supreme Court, which we have a big speech due on that next week. You know, I've been doing all those things in the last few days, and I'm like, I've just been jumping everywhere, Rick. Oh, my gosh. It has been crazy. But
Luann, I don't question your commitment.
Yeah. And I encourage everybody to get involved. Find something that you could do, whether you help someone set up a website, you know, whether you start a radio show, I can show you how to do that. Walk with SEER and AAAPG and NASGA and all these other organizations to get a hold of them. Ask them how you can help. Maybe answer some phones. There's a lot of things people can do, right?
That's right.
Right. Let me just say, sorry to interrupt you.
You know, I hate to be so, I don't know, crass, whatever it is, but numbers speak louder than words a lot of times. And it's really easy to like something or make a comment on Facebook. But Rick, you and I, Robin, and a few others are doing this 7 days a week. And for me and for Rick and for you, it's honestly, it's 85% of my time that I've devoted to making changes in guardianship. And we need other people. So I'm begging you, please help us. Join us.
Right. Well, one of the things that every adult, let's get this in there. Every adult right now, everyone listening, and every person who is living in the United States, write to your congressman. You go to the website, find my rep, find my House of Congress. Jerry Nadler is a congressman from New York, as Rick mentioned. They can convene hearings. And also write to Merrick Garland. Listening to his speech, discuss with him or mention to him that you believe that the rule of law, those words, rule of law, is not being respected and abided by in your local equity, probate, conservatorship courts. But it is very important. It's the least thing that you can do. It is your civic duty to let your representatives know that we have a national problem that will certainly evolve into a much larger national crisis if we do not get a handle on this. So the very least that we can ask, and, you know, I write emails, I go on websites, my local state senator, I know he's annoyed by me. You just got to keep doing it. You just got to keep going and write those letters,
right.
Send those emails, make those calls.
Absolutely.
Hey, last week we didn't have any, I didn't bring any callers in because of the show. We had Dr. Sam Sugar on. We had all kinds of stuff going on there. So I basically told everybody I would be taking phone calls this time on this show tonight. So we've got like three or four callers. So let's bring some in, okay? A 510 area code. Did you have a question or a comment?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi,
go ahead.
It's Sandy Cobianchi.
Hi.
It's Sandy Cobianchi.
Hi.
Fine. How are
Good.
You?
Good. Good.
I've been wanting to come on for weeks, and I finally made it on tonight. Kathy Rodriguez is on, and she's like, you need to call this number. We need to tune in. So anyway, just to support, if anything. Anyways, it's just, you know, it's just good stuff, and it's good for us to know what everybody else is doing. I have to say, I've always felt strongly from the beginning that, you know, not only do we need to be there and uplift each other, but we also need to tell each other things so that we learn off of other people's experiences. And I will say, because I talked to Lisa McCarley before. Hi, Lisa. She made a couple calls for me. My mom died 6 weeks ago. I have to say that, you know, when you were talking about the corrupt, and when Lisa was talking about, like, what's the three categories in corruptness, and I just feel like you can't excuse a conservator when you're asking to call and wish your mother happy birthday or to call her period, or you're asking to have your mom step out with you for a couple hours, or you're asking to see your mom at all. And with the conservator, uh-huh. you've got tons and tons and tons of emails, and the conservator says, no, I'm sorry, but I disagree there. I fault the conservator. That's they're willingly isolating, and they know what they're doing is wrong. So I hold that conservator just as accountable as the attorneys that represent that conservator. When you make them aware and you show them the evidence, you have to hold the conservatives accountable for what they're doing because they want to keep the cash cow going. They want to keep the game going. They want to keep the control going. And it's abuse. I mean, that wasn't one of the things that we talked about or what Lisa was saying was one of the things that we can call what's going on. But abuse is surely one of them. And I think abuse goes hand in hand with corruptness. It's corruption.
Right. Well, the isolation, that's the most, that's what I was saying before, is that I think of all the things that these people do in the probate courts, Orange County being probably one of the most infamous in the country, isolation of elders, which is also family separation, absolutely is torture. And no, I agree with you. Under no circumstances should parents and children be separated unless somebody's, basically beating on the other person. In other words, if there's not physical abuse, if there's not, actual touching and harming and severe psychological abuse, parents and children belong together always, every day, as much as they want to be. I mean, I will never back down from that. So I agree with you.
Right.
What they do is disgusting. I mean, that's just disgusting. You're absolutely right, and that should never be a policy, and especially because I believe your mom had the public guardian, too. I mean, a governmental agency, they should know better, but they should not be allowed to do that, really. They just should not be allowed to control, period, end of story. Governments should never be in the family separation business. And that's why sometimes I do call it, it's like that's what Nazis did. The first thing they did was separate families because it's debilitating, and then you can begin the manipulation.
Right. That's what cults
Yeah,
do.
you are so correct there. You are so correct about the isolation. And I think to me that pisses me off more than anything on this radio show program is isolating that elder to start putting things in their head that their child doesn't love them anymore. And they started fights with you. To me, that is one of the hardest things on this program that we talk about, because it shouldn't be happening.
Right.
It's bad. That happened to my family, and it was tough. Yeah. It was really tough.
Right.
And I can't stand that.
But
hey,
to Rick,
Sandy, a credit to you though. Your mom has been gone less than a month. Any of the folks that we've counseled over the years, I'm always waiting for when their loved one passes, because most of us never get our loved ones back. They die in the Odyssey. Is what transition do you go through after the passing? Do you move away from this and play no part? You're desperate when you're trying to – everybody, all of us are desperate when we're trying to save a loved one. That's understandable.
Yeah.
But then do you take that pain, that experience, and try to turn it into a positive to help others? And specific to you, your participation yesterday in Kathy Rodriguez's hearing, your participation in the protest march last weekend, you're already turning your pain into a positive. And I just want to thank you and your sister, because you're making that transition, and I just, you're an inspiration to me. You're an inspiration, I hope, to others, because all of us have to take this pain and try to turn it into a positive.
Right.
Thank you, Rick. And you know what?
But I have to say, Luann, that, and again, thank you again, Rick, for saying that, but I have to say that for me, we're all different and our journeys are different. For me, I'm going to make my mom's death and what she went through, I'm going to make it count by helping others. I'm not, what I'm saying? I'm going to make that count. I'm going to make it worth what my mom went through. I'm going to make it worth fighting so that other people don't have to go through that. I mean, that's where my heart is. That's where my conviction is. But I will say, I know we, you know, I've talked about this in the very beginning when I came on to the National Coalition about watching at the time that I came on with Rick and all the groups, this whole thing with NXIVM and how they navigated that with Catherine Oxenberg. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but I read the book, I watched the documentary, they made a movie, and it was very, very telling and interesting how they took this cult down and this guy that had deep, deep pockets down. And they Rick said this earlier on the show tonight about the FBI, talking to the FBI, we need to find the criminal and we need to have the evidence against that, and that's how we're going to bring these people down, or at least get the Department of Justice their ear. Because my mom was in a board and care, and they board and care have rules that are state mandated, and they crossed those rules. They denied her those rules. They denied her civil rights. I mean, to me, that's criminal. I don't understand why. I have emails upon emails upon emails. I'm talking hundreds of emails from the conservatives saying, no, you can't see your mom today. No, you can't see your mom this weekend. No, you can't talk to your mom. No, you can't go over there.
But Sandy, let's you're making a great point, and I just want to share it with everyone. Look, the top law enforcement officer in each state is the attorney general. The only attorney general in this country who has ever investigated professional guardians and attorneys who used the probate court as a weapon was Nevada between 2015 and 2019, which yielded a bunch of criminal convictions. We have attempted to get the New Mexico AG engaged, the California AG engaged, the Texas AG engaged. Here's where I want to give people hope. That's not a strategy, but it is progress. We had a dinner with Ken Paxton, the AG of Texas, not me personally, but people that I'm working closely with, about a month ago. And it was 45 minutes on estate trafficking and fraudulent guardianships. And he said, hey, I've heard about this. I want to engage. I want to help. We've got another dinner planned this week with him to follow up on that. We're now getting, hopefully, a meeting with the Attorney General of Florida. It's moving
good.
In the right direction. But we have failed in California. We've made many attempts. We haven't gotten there. We haven't gotten there with New York either. But it's coming because we've got some good strategic things going there. But everybody plays a role in this. But I'm convinced, we're touching a lot of people, and we're batting 1%. And it's extremely frustrating because you think your efforts aren't yielding returns. But I do want to say, yes, Sandy, this is criminal. Yes, it should be investigated as criminal. And we need to get access to the California AG, the new one, and get them engaged in this. Because ultimately, once they do, these county DAs, county law enforcement, they'll be forced to recognize this and take action. And we haven't really even started in California when you look at it from the perspective of criminal investigations.
Sandy, you were talking earlier about you want to get involved and continuously speak out on your mom's behalf. That's what happened to me. That's why my radio shows are continuing. And when my mom passed a year ago, people came to me and they said, are you going to stop being an advocate? And I said, no, I'm going to be even more stronger than I've ever been in my life. And
Guess what?
The symposium that I'm speaking of, guess what day that is? That's my mother's birthday. I mean, I don't even know if I could even do the speech that day, let alone speak on the behalf of my mother, on the symposium.
Yeah.
But how many times do you get to speak out on your mother's birthday like that? I'm like, whoa, this is so cool. Definitely pick it up and be there and be happy about your mom. Just go out there and continue. And we'll keep doing our talks that we even do on the last, I think we can talk with Venus and all that whole group there as well, But I continue what you're doing, absolutely, absolutely, and I give my condolences to you and your mom. That just breaks my
Thank
heart,
you.
You know. Anyway, we're going to keep you live with us. So let's bring on another caller. We've got three or four callers that want to come in. 727, you are live with us now. Welcome to the show. 727 area code.
Hi, Luann. This is Sue Melendi. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good.
Welcome to
we're
the show.
We're in Florida.
Yeah, okay. Question or comment?
Well, I want to share that we have a meeting tomorrow with Matt Gaetz's office. I had a conference call with one of his legal assistants on Monday. And we really want to start having more involvement, like we were speaking with earlier, as a larger group from the state of Florida as well as other states, so that we can draw attention to this not only through the local government but on more of a national level. So she asked us to take on a couple of calls to action, which will be a letter that I'm drafting that is going to go to Matt Gaetz, and he is going to try to facilitate a meeting with Mr. Nadler. And then Hillary and I have discussed putting together a change.org. So I'm also involved in another advocacy group, and what we do is I have a list of all of our House of Representatives contact information. And so the people can either copy and paste the letter and send it to their constituents so that they're visible at a local level. And if they want to personalize the letter and they have the time and the interest in doing so, they can. But literally if they want to copy and paste the letter. But we're looking to really have people take an active role and join in on this letter because, you know, if we all work independently and we draft a letter here and there and send it to, you know, a smaller group of people, we don't have the same momentum, you know, if we can try to facilitate working some of these things as a larger group and really emphasizing with our constituents.
Good work, though, out there. And if you can send information to my email as well at faceusradio@hotmail.com, I will, you know, be glad to send that to Venus and as many people as I can. I'll even put it up on Facebook. I put things everywhere. I share things in every direction. I spend half my day sending things in email. So if you want to send that out, but that's good information. Thank you for coming on. I mean, I'm sure Hilly will keep us informed on that as well. Okay. So good work on that. Yeah. Keep us informed.
Thank you so much. Thank you for all that you're doing.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. That's great. Wow.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
God bless.
925, you are live with us tonight. You're live on the air. You have a question or comment?
This is, can you hear me?
Yeah,
Kathy. Okay, good. This is Kathy Rodriguez. I have a couple of questions. Probably Lisa or Rick probably answer it. I need to find out if when a person dies, if I can be the administrator of the state, although there is an estate, there is not an estate, but I need to get information for my aunt's wrongful death. So I don't want to say too much because we're online, just in case somebody's hearing. I am tapping into something that's probably going to open up a door for all of us in the wrongful death of my aunt.
So
that's
Kathy,
one of the questions.
Yeah.
So Kathy, the answer is yes. What you need is what is called letters of special administration. And you'd have to give notice, and that is kind of one of the things that trips people up. But if you can put together a list of the closest relatives by blood of your aunt. Did she leave a will? Let me just ask you that. Was there any kind of a will or anything?
There was no will. I am the trust of her trust. I'm the trustee of her trust that was done 14, 15 years ago.
Okay.
So I do have
letters
that.
Of special administration. Oh. Right. So we'll set that for hearing. And then you can ask for authority to obtain the decedent's, your aunt's medical records and so forth. That's what
it's
called.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get. Yeah.
Okay. So that's a document.
What I'm
trying to get. Why don't you go ahead and contact me? You know how to reach me, and I can look. We can work together. That's a pretty easy thing to do. You know, and it may not give you authority to marshal assets, but if there's nothing to marshal in terms of nothing that you're aware of that's in the bank and so forth, but the special administration will allow you the authority to review medical records and get copies of everything.
Okay, yeah, that's what I need.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, there's no money, but I am really grateful through this whole process because helping people, it's like my aunt has encouraged me in so many ways. I've done weddings and parties because my aunt taught me. I mean, she was my roommate when I was a teenager. She instilled a lot of good stuff into me, and now she's pushing me into an area that I never thought I would get into. I'm going to be retiring from my job soon, and my retirement is, like, pretty good, monthly retirement. And I'm going to be working with Evan Nelson. I'm going to be interning under him and for like the next
good.
4 years. And I'm going to be taking the baby bar in the bar to become an attorney and begin to fight for people's civil rights.
Awesome.
And this, everything
awesome.
Is just lining up. I mean, what I'm going through is very tragic because it's like not only did my dad die under guardianship, my aunt did as well. And I think it's so very important that people who are in this predicament or situation need to get involved and be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem, be a participator, not a spectator, because we need more participators in this, you know, journey that we're all on, because it's so serious.
God bless you,
just
Kathy.
One person passing away is one person too many,
right.
You know, and I've had two people in my family. And so I just wanted to share that. And I thank God for all the people that I met who are my friends, like all you who are online, because I would have never met you if this never happened. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks for your courage and your commitment.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Rick.
No, just thanks for your courage and your commitment. It's been a blessing to get to know you. It was fun watching you today because you didn't cower to a lot of attacks. So.
Oh, my gosh. You know what? I
yeah.
wanted to be on there, but I was four of them today. Oh, my gosh. I was on four different ones. It's like I was going crazy today. Like,
oh,
my
you
know,
God. That was a really good experience. Because I have training now because my cousin Rose took me to 5 restraining orders and I went to multiple court hearings. And so that prepared me for this very day and, you know, this restraining order. And I could just see right through their deceitful and lies. You know, they're just anybody can write a restraining order and say you did this, this and this. Well, then now it's your turn to prove it once we go to trial, which is going to be very difficult because everything they said never happened. So
right.
It's really going to make them look like what I have been saying is true, period, dot, dot, dot. You know what I mean? You guys
Kathy,
are manipulators.
You did great, and they looked foolish. And I love that judge reminds me of a famous Chinese actress that was on an ER show. And I just kept watching her, and her facial expressions were like, this is ridiculous. I can't believe that we're going to have to actually go through this. And it was because you handled it so well. So, again,
right.
It was just fun to watch you.
Yeah. You know, and I wanted to
say something. I wish you didn't have to go through
I tried
through
to get
this,
on
you
to your on your case, and I swear to God, I was on another case for 3 days, the one happened in Colorado. When I got to yours, my phone died. Just, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. I was running all over trying to find my charger.
One more question probably for Lisa is that I want to have the hearing, the trial recorded. Is there a special form for that?
When you say recorded, meaning on video?
Video recorded, yeah.
Well, you have to actually get permission from a judge, and I've tried, and I haven't been able to do that, but, I mean, I certainly just call the court clerk and ask. I mean, when you say recorded, they would probably want someone official, like a court reporter's firm, to do it, and that would be, you know, again, I don't know what the rules are, but you have to get the judge's permission. I've tried to do that too, and I've never been successful.
Yeah, well, I told her that I wanted to record it, number one, because I do have a disability and I'm using the ADA Act, number one. And number two, that I need it for a documentary for my aunt's thing, because I want to use that whole thing eventually one day in the documentary, because a lot of us who go through guardianship court get bullied by their false restraining order tactics.
Okay, but, right. But let's...
Had seven,
Lisa,
of them. I had
the press.
Seven. We had seven in my family.
Hold a second. Hold on. I just want to stay on this for a second. Lisa, press would get routinely can get access to these proceedings, and if you're working with a legitimate documentarian, Kathy, I would ask that they submit under a media request and pursue it that way, so that you're separating your personal involvement with the case with the press or the media.
Yeah.
And then see if that works, because court proceedings, I mean, think back Michael Jackson, O.J. Simpson, court proceedings are recorded quite often, but do it through a professional or someone that can at least present themselves as legitimate media.
Yeah. I posted that on Facebook today, that very question. Because I'm all like, she might deny me, but if I find someone who's a professional media person, then I'll be able to get it. You know what I mean? Yeah.
No,
so that's
absolutely
confirmation.
And Cheryl Hiltzik, she's in Southern California, a little far from you, but she is doing a lot of this as we speak. I can get her a contact number. Maybe she can help you on this. But, but I would certainly try that
too.
Route, just that you separate yourself from – you know, your personal engagement in the case versus the recording.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, my niece knows her.
Yeah.
She lives in Santa Clarita area?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Oh, and I'm in touch with her as
my
well.
My niece knows
her.
That's one of her good friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk
I'm
going to
do that.
She knows how to operate in a courtroom.
yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
You know, Rick, I think I've
met her and I've talked to her on the
really,
phone too.
I think that's a really wise approach, because then it's less threatening to them. It takes it away
that's
from
right.
you.
That's right.
Yes,
right.
Totally.
And that's the same thing when you go out and you got to cover every base you do when you go out and when you ticket and all that. You got to make sure that you have okays from everybody. We just cover every base we can, everything, so nothing happens. But I did have seven false restraining orders served on me when we were going through this with my mother, and mine happened twice on me.
Wow.
So you always have to go in there and just say, this can happen. You know?
Yeah.
They use that as one of the tactics to bring you down, and I...
Right.
Well,
another caller.
I have 13 Alameda County employees who filed a restraining order against me. And do you think I'm scared? No, I'm not.
Yeah.
If you guys want to see how ridiculous they'll take it, my mom's caregiver filed a restraining order against me, so I couldn't go pick her up and take her out to lunch back in the day when I could see her. And I let the guardian know a million times with no response. But the freaking caregiver put a restraining order on me. How ridiculous is that?
Yeah.
We've seen it all,
hey, well,
Sandy.
Bring in another caller. Bring in another caller. We have another 510 area code. 510 area code. Question or comment?
Can you hear me? It's probably me. It's Venus. I'm just listening. How you guys doing?
Oh, it's Venus.
Yay,
hi.
Venus.
How you doing?
Yes. Hi.
Hey, Venus.
Yes. hi, you know, all the gang is on, so I thought I'd just join in at the end. I was doing some paperwork, getting ready for April 9th court date for my father, the attorney fee, so I just wanted to tune in.
Yeah.
How was
the
show?
Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's good to hear you. You make sure you get us to all the court dates for everybody. It's something we have to do like a day or so, and then a reminder that day, because I get really involved sometimes, and I know a lot of people do, and they forget, or got two or three of them going on at one time. Like today I had two or three, oh my God, almost four. I had two other people ask me to zoom in. It's like, oh my God, I don't know if I can't do this, you know, but we need to have those court dates in advance if we can. And like I said, we talked earlier about Zoom calls coming in, and I think this has been a huge tool for us to go in and chime in on some of these cases. So,
yeah,
the COVID thing back there. So, Venus, now hang in there. Let me go ahead and let me see if there's another caller somewhere. No, there's one somewhere in here. 720 number. 720 number. Question or comment?
Colorado.
Hello?
Colorado. Yes.
Okay.
You're live.
Hi. I was wondering if anybody has tried or if anybody knows why the ACLU won't take this on. I mean, I tried 25 years ago with the ACLU, and, you know, you didn't have as many people now. Nobody believed it. This is America. These things aren't yet going on. Why? This is the ultimate in felons and people in prison have more rights. This is the ultimate in taking up people's rights. I mean, you know, court cases behind their backs, you know, like you were talking about restraining orders. Restraining orders, you can have an emergency hearing, and then down the road, the person gets to come to the hearing and contest it. You have the same with this, except for down the road, you get to contest it. But meanwhile, the conservator has frozen all your money. Try to get an attorney with no money. So this is the ultimate in abuse of human rights. Why, has anybody tried the ACLU?
Yeah.
Yes.
So any one of you have any ideas to why that is? I've wondered that myself.
I don't know why. Yeah. I've tried. I've written. I've called. There's this woman that renders an opinion from San Francisco. I thought, oh, great, because I have a case in Orange County. We know the Siegelands. I'm like, this is, you know, so repulsive to me what they've done to that family in Orange County. And I call. And I don't even get a call back. And I'm just like, look, I'm an attorney. I'm looking for some help. You want help on, if you need some help on some things that you're working on, you know, I'm happy to even do, you know, quid pro quo, volunteer. Nothing. I have no idea. I have no idea
Rick,
why
what
they
do
don't
think
about
that.
Rick,
what do you think?
Lisa and I are going to have a chat on this while we're here on the phone, which hopefully so folks will benefit. Was that with this Zoe Brennan Crone?
Yes, I tried. Lisa? I tried to reach her. I've sent her emails. I've called. I've left messages. I've written letters. I've copied them in correspondence. Her, yes. Up in San Francisco.
Here's my call out to the folks in the Bay Area. She is at 39 Jerome Street, San Francisco. Clearly, MSNBC found her and she engaged as if to present an ACLU support strategy to the Free Brittany movement. And I just think we need to flood her with calls and requests for a meeting, particularly those in the Bay Area, to just tell her your story. And let's put a little pressure on her. Hey, if you're really interested, you took a national interview with Joshua Johnson, come help us. And let's see if we can motivate her. Because I, too, sent an email to her right after that interview. I didn't get a response, but I haven't tried to call her yet, but I will. But, you know, that's an outlet. I'm like you, though, Lisa. I've tried the ACLU no less than 25 times in Washington, D.C., and at other branch offices since 2014, I've never gotten a bite. But honestly, I look at the ACLU like I look at each state protection and advocacy group, which is the disability rights, federal disability rights arm that's supported by DOJ and DHHS. And they long ago quit providing counsel and support for people in guardianships because it became cost prohibitive. And they recognized we lose. We lose at the at the district level, we lose on appeal, and it just, we're going to throw resources at it, and we know we can't win, which is very disappointing given that they have a direct mainline into DOJ, and they didn't say, hey, we've got a problem brewing out here in the States, because keep in mind, ADA started in 1993. This is only a 27, 28-year-old phenomenon, and that group, when it was put in place, realized very quickly, we can't counteract fraudulent professional adult guardianships.
Right.
That's a terrible statement.
That's a terrible statement.
It is, but you know something, Rick? I mean, the ACLU, of course, has done nothing for us, nothing for anyone of color or anyone with a disability in a guardianship. And I've heard that maybe the reason why is because they get mega grants from the government.
Right. Hey, we have another caller. 27. You have another caller, 727. You have a question or comment?
Luann, can you hear me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Good evening, you guys. Hi, Rick. Hi, Hillary. It's Sharon McLean in Clearwater.
Sharon,
I'm trying to follow
you earlier.
This whole show tonight. Great show, by the way. Good job, Hillary, chasing around DeSantis in Florida. That was very interesting. I think, Kathy Rodriguez, you were asking about the media. Rick hit it right on the head. Adam Walzer managed to get one of the judges here in Pinellas County on the record, on video, on film, saying how great this guardian was. And then just a few weeks ago, again, he got her in the courtroom where she's yelling at the criminal attorney for this guardian who was since arrested for exploitation. And so now we have the same judge who was saying how great this guardian was, and now we have her backpedaling, arguing with the criminal attorney that he better get it together with her guardianship attorneys. It was just a fiasco. But you guys hit it on the head. Going in with somebody non-personal, that has access to television news channels, because that was all over the news, and that wouldn't have been made possible without Adam Walzer doing that. Another note, I just want to let you guys know that I was almost to the point that I was not going to speak at the symposium.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being is, and I'm glad you said it, Luann, and I know Rick knows how I feel about this. Hillary, you too. It's very, very despairing to know that this is all about money. The whole entire thing is nothing but because of greediness and money. And I just feel like there's not that much attention on the isolation. I know for a fact that my mother was left alone, so she would just be broken down to the point where she was going to give up, and she did. And then just hearing everybody talk about money, 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 but then a very dear friend of mine said, yes, you are correct in approaching it about the cruelty to the families, the cruelty to the, and I call them victims. I refuse to call them wards. The mm-hmm. cruelty that goes on, the manipulation, the illegal gag orders, restraining orders, but what happens is what is going to motivate anybody who's not in this unawful club that we're all in to become interested is the idea that they too will lose their future and quote unquote inheritance. They too, they're going to the sad part is a lot of people are only going to be motivated because they don't want to lose the family's real estate, you know, tangibles, non-tangibles, et cetera, et cetera. So I said, okay, you got it. And she said, but we need to hear people's stories, like your mother's stories, because my mother's story is not about money. My mother's story from the beginning was nothing but you people are not taking care of my mother. They lied, said she got a new pacemaker. I've got her old pacemaker. Her pacemaker was never replaced. They said on her death certificate that she died of breast cancer. My mother never had breast cancer a day in her life. I mean, it's just so ridiculous. And yes, it's wrongful death, but it's so criminal. But it's just unbelievable that we have to focus on the money aspect just to get people to realize that this is crazy and criminal. But I guess it is what it is.
So are you going to be speaking at the symposium then?
Yes, I'm going to do it. But, you know, because I've been dodging these. This is what's really, really burning me up. I tried so hard. I cannot tell you. I've got all the emails. I tried every single attorney in Pinellas County to help me when I was going through this. And now I can't beat them off with a stick. Now that everything is coming to a head, we're interested. We'll help you. Why? Because they think they might get some money out of it. You know, it's very nauseating that I couldn't get an attorney while my mother was alive and she might still be here. But, you know, now that all these people we found out that died because of this awful person, now it's like, let's do a class action lawsuit. And it just really makes me sick.
You know, and I don't blame you. And that's why I'm like, I say, everybody needs to come to the symposium. And we're running out of time on this radio show, but I want to go over it one more time.
Yes, and you're right. And we need to, and that other guy who was talking, God bless you, because 6 weeks after my mother was dead, I wasn't ready to talk to anybody. So God bless you. And all of you people that are keep on Hillary, God bless you, Rick Black. And that's another thing. I saw something really disgusting tonight on Facebook about Rachel. I was so nauseated. Like, how dare anybody say anything negative about any of you people that are just busting your chops trying to help people. They don't even realize you're helping them, and they don't even realize that they too one day might need all the work you've done.
Thanks, everybody. We are going to be bringing on 4 or 5 more people coming on that are going to be speakers next week at the 2021 AAPD Guardianship Symposium. Why this is very important for us to be doing this. We're going to be bringing on 4 or 5 more guests next week. So stay tuned and call in with your questions. And Lisa McCarley, how can people get a hold of you?
All right. So you can certainly find me on Instagram at Lisa McCarley. You can find me on Twitter. Or if you want to get a hold of me personally, you can email me at lisamccarley@yahoo.com. That's another way
and
as
that's,
well.
That's,
and, of course,
that's M-A-C-M-A-C-T-A-R-L-E-Y,
that's
right?
Right, yes, exactly. Yeah. Sometimes I sing it, too, M-A-C. See you real soon, you know, C-A-R-L-E-Y.
There you go, Lisa McCarley. And, Rick, they can always reach you. How do they reach you?
Yeah, we're on Instagram and Twitter as Fear Justice, and we're on the web at www.searjustice.org. That's CEARJUSTICE.org. And my cell phone is always on.
There you go. So,
yes, it is.
I
thank
guess,
you. Thank you for having us. Yeah, thanks.
Good show.
Yeah, you got
thanks
it.
For,
thanks
for all you're doing.
You got it. So
everybody.
Next week. Yep. Everybody, good night. We will be back next week. So join us then. Justice requires transparency and accountability and never giving up. And I love you, my mother. You know, don't ever give up. Don't ever stop speaking about your moms, everybody. Don't ever. Go with them with all the love in your heart as is today. Anyway, love you, Mom. Here we go. Good night, everyone. See you next week.
Good night.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Good night.
Bye. Good night.
You got it. I'm still trying to find this song. Here we go. Let's do this one.
Did you know that elders and others are losing their rights to liberty and property? Anyone can petition a court to have a person deemed incapacitated. What if that person is you? The adult guardianship system was created to protect incompetent people and their assets. A court-appointed guardian, sometimes a total stranger, can force you into a nursing home and sell your home to pay for services. Treasured belongings can disappear as you are drugged and isolated from loved ones. Why does this happen? Unfortunately, the courts don't have the funding to supervise and audit cases. A guardian makes all decisions on your behalf, taking control of your assets with little accountability. The potential for abuse is frightening. Luckily, not all guardians exploit those under their care, but when they do, there's really nowhere to go for help. The National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, NASGA, is working to reform adult guardianship to return it to its once noble purpose of protecting the human rights to life, liberty, and property and ending financial exploitation of assets. Are you or your loved ones protected? To learn more, visit StopGuardianAbuse.org.